Battle of Wombats. Able to reach huge audiences with a single broadcast.
Listen, coming from that speaker, it's talk radio.
It's an audio extravaganza.
It's the Outdoor Journal.
Yes, it's the Outdoor Journal radio show. A unique program with a different point of view about things other than hockey, baseball, basketball, and yuck, soccer. Outdoor Journal. Champion of equal rights for people who like to fish, hunt, camp, and otherwise play outside. Valiant, courageous fighter who fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the Canadian outdoors. And now, another exciting episode of the adventures of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Good morning, everybody. A wonderful weekend. A long weekend. Happy long weekend, everybody. Labor Day weekend. I'm Angelo Viola. Thanks for joining me here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Outdoor Journal Radio, along with Rick Delishny on the other side of the glass.
Indeed. The pleasure is all yours.
Well, thank you, Ricky. Awfully kind of you. By the way, I was told this morning when I came in by our man behind the glass, Ricky, that this is Blue Moon Day.
Indeed.
What is Blue Moon Day?
Well, I'm going to have to look it up on the Book of Knowledge to be exact, but it's a very, very bright moon, and it went all through the evening, and in the morning when the sky's blue, you get this.
So this is where this
blue moon looks blue. I don't know.
Where the saying "once in a blue moon."
I'm thinking that might be it. Yeah.
Well, I like you because you brought it up. I'd like you to do complete research on this before the end of the program.
Yeah.
I'd like to know how often it comes up.
Absolutely, indeed. All right. Will let you know that, and I will tweet that.
Let's not forget the tweeting thing.
ODJ Radio.
Yeah. How's that coming?
It's coming along well.
Are we tweeting good?
Oh, we're tweeting like you have no idea.
No kidding. Wow.
But I'll get that stats for you, Ange, for sure.
All right, here we go. Great weekend. Once again, welcome to Outdoor Journal on Sportsnet 590. It is the last big hurrah, I guess, for the summer for most of us. Although this summer, I'm telling you, is never going to end. We are going to have beautiful warm days right through till, I'm predicting, mid-November. How's that? I'll let everybody write that one down before I go on here, just so that you can throw it back in my face when the snow flies in October. But no, it is going to be a warm, long summer. Quick shout out to the folks up in Owen Sound. The Salmon Spectacular continues this week. It has been, by all accounts, a tremendous week, one of the best in their 25-year history. The salmon are cooperating. The folks are coming out in droves. I checked the results on Wednesday, and John Topp was at the top of the leaderboard at 19.76 pounds. That's a beautiful Chinook. He's leading the whole deal, and everybody's on pins and needles in the Topp family to see if it stands up. A few days left to go. Today they're having their big fish fry on the waterfront there in Owen Sound between 4 and 9 p.m. And tomorrow it will continue. The fish fry will continue. I understand Elvis is in the big top. Yes, he is back. He goes there every year, apparently. You can check on the tourism website for Owen Sound for all the details. And maybe take a quick run up there. A great way to spend a day this wonderful long weekend. Now, the past few weeks, we've been talking to you, and you've been reading a lot in the mainstream media. We've been giving you the heads up on bugs and the health risk that they present this year. Updates have been provided on West Nile virus and Lyme disease. And in keeping with that, a very, very special guest will be joining us later on in the program. Her name is Catherine Maroon. You know her as What a Catch television host, a great program that, set a whole bunch of new standards in outdoor programming several years ago when Catherine first came to air. We've got her on not because of that, unfortunately, but because Catherine contacted Lyme disease several years ago. And she's going to talk to us about how it completely altered her life. And she's going to kind of let us in the back door on this dreaded disease and how you can avoid it. Probably the most important thing. We did some checking recently, and the black-legged tick, which carries the disease in Ontario, has been tested in the Haldimand Norfolk area. 36% of the ticks tested there are positive with Lyme. 36%. Now, these ticks are carriers of Lyme disease, obviously. And in just 5 years, positive tests have increased from 5% to 36%. So it is definitely something that we need to be vigilant about. And our vigilant host, producer, illustrious outdoor leader here on the program, John Winters, joins us right now to tell us more about it. Morning, Johnny.
How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing not too bad, thank you. A little stuffy this morning. I don't know what that's all about. Maybe I got bit on the way in or something.
That could happen.
I know. Now, we're not trying to scare people with this whole Lyme disease. And, of course, the West Nile thing is really breaking out right now in the area. We're not trying to scare people, you know, into not going outside. The whole idea is just to take proper precautions and proper measures.
Well, exactly. And first of all, so we don't annoy any of our friends down in Haldimand, Norfolk.
Haldimand. What did I call it?
Haldimand, Norfolk, which is a very beautiful area of Ontario down on the sort of the North Shore of Lake Erie.
I know it as Norfolk.
Yes.
You threw a curve at me with that Haldimand thing.
All right.
I know it by last name only. I'm not on a first name basis with the folks at Norfolk.
So Lyme's expanding in Ontario. A lot of it has to do with the very warm weather, and it's not just a one-time warm weather. It's we are getting warmer, and the disease is moving, and then there are these vectors that carry it. And when I say a vector, you have to have something that's going to move it from one spot to another.
Now, this is not just purely that whole global warming thing, is it?
Well, it's got to be a part of this. I suspect as well that there's always a lag. When a disease comes into an area, it always starts out relatively isolated and localized. That seems to be the pattern. And then after a while, it gets a foothold, and then it starts to move. And animals and birds will move it.
Wow.
And so a bird that is, or any other carrier that starts to move across the landscape is going to take it to the next spot, and then something moves from there to the next spot, and eventually you have it over a much wider area.
And precaution is the word of the day when it comes to, you know, Lyme disease or, you know, the West Nile virus and all that stuff. It's just a matter of protecting yourself. And I'm sure that Catherine will fill us in on that. She'll point that out loud and clear, I'm sure. Great program you got for us today, buddy. I see we're also doing our hunting thing. We're going to be going to North Central Ontario and speaking to Nick Doyle from Rocks Hunt Camp, along with, of course, Keith Beasley from Canada and Rough. So that should be interesting. Keith had a very poor bear outing last week, so he's going to fill us in on that. You think he, being the consummate hunter that he is, that bear hunting would not be an issue, but they are a lot smarter than, well, obviously a lot smarter than Keith Beasley. Carol Caputo, the queen of Northern Ontario tourism, is going to be joining us from Algoma Country, one of my favorite places in the whole wide world, one of Ontario's most spectacular locations for sure. That drive from Sault Ste. Marie along the north shore of Lake Huron to, and Superior is absolutely breathtaking. And, of course, breathtaking this time of year because of color changes. Now, before we move on, I want to talk to you about that just quickly, John. You're a bit of an expert on color changes, having spent the last 15 years or so in Algonquin Park. Does this heat change that this year?
I say yes.
Okay.
I say yes. The first thing that you're going to observe, and it's already occurring out there, people will have seen it, there are changes occurring on individual trees right where they live. Some of that is drought. And these trees are under tremendous stress. So when they are deprived of water, and we're talking about sugar maples in particular, because they're the ones that give us that spectacular crimson color in the fall,
mm-hmm.
If they're deprived of water, then the tree, through its own internal biology, starts to shut down, and it's under stress, and it's trying to conserve water. So you will see a yellow or maybe even a red tinge starting on some trees now. So what we're going to do this year, Angelo, is we're going to bring people fall color updates because it shifts. It shifts basically a lot based on the number of hours of daylight. So if you think of it, there are more hours of daylight the further south you go, which means that that's a little bit later for fall color change. Niagara is probably 3 weeks later than Algonquin Park.
Really? And so Carol up in Algoma country should be in full bloom up there right now.
I don't think full bloom, but here'd be my guess. I'm going to suggest that probably she's going to say Algoma hits somewhere around the 20th to the 25th of September, and Algonquin Park is the 25th to the 30th. And then I'm going to say that somewhere in Niagara is probably around just a bit after the Thanksgiving weekend.
You see, I just learned something new here on the program. Every week I learn something new. You know what I just learned? That the color change in the fall in trees has nothing to do with cold temperatures. You're telling me it's because it's dry.
I didn't say it was nothing to do with cold temperatures. In fact, cold temperatures push this along further.
You're a wealth of information.
I'm going to tell you in a future episode, I will bring on someone who's much smarter than me.
Oh my God!
That means that they've got to be somewhere up around Mensa level and absolutely spectacularly knowledgeable. But
Albert
they could
Einstein.
Be just a forester.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, we'll bring someone on and they'll give us the full scoop on why we get fall color change.
I'm going to talk to you a little bit later on, my good friend, about a subject that we have been certainly highlighting for some time here on the program. It's the Algonquin land claim issue. But I'm going to talk to you from a totally different perspective. I want to get inside your head and get into some of that background information that you collected as the man in charge of Algonquin Park, because this land claim is surrounding that little jewel of ours, and I'm sure you have some interesting stories to share with the audience about those.
I just can't wait for that interview, Angela. This will be kind of like I'm going to ask the audience to imagine this is what it's going to be like. It's like having a root canal and a vasectomy all at the same time.
Attaboy. Go prepare for it. Go take your meds.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you soon, Johnny.
Okay.
John Winters will be joining us at the bottom of the hour with a candid look on his take on this whole issue and maybe some of his experiences in the park with the First Nations people and, you know, their conservation practices or perhaps lack thereof. Who knows? I don't want to put words in his mouth. We'll also be joined a little later on another good friend of the program, Brad Kampkin from Kampkin's RVs. Kampkin's RVs is one of the largest RV dealers in this part of the province, and he's going to talk to us about fall camping and trends in the RV industry. But right now, without further ado, our good friend, Staff Sergeant with the OPP, Bradley Schlorff, who's an expert in, he's an expert in some areas, I'm sure, in his own right. Good morning, young man. How are you?
Okay, so, you know, based on your conversation with John, right up front, I'm not much smarter than anybody, but every time I listen to the show, I learn something new, and what I learned this morning, and it's amazing how much us old people talk about the weather.
Oh, it is, and it gets worse, buddy.
Oh, no.
All right, so it's Labor Day weekend, the final hurrah, if you will. Can you give us some kind of an indicator, a report on what's coming up, what to expect?
Well, first of all, the weather's supposed to be really, really good, so people are going to be out in the hinterlands in droves, and, you know, that's both good that people are going to go and have a great time, but it's also not good because sometimes those droves don't do the smartest things, and people wind up getting hurt or killed.
Yeah.
And so far, you know, the way we compile our statistics, John made a pretty good observation. They don't really get done until later in the week. But just as a for instance, last year there were four people killed in OPP jurisdiction, three in motor vehicle collisions and one in a boat. As of yesterday afternoon, we're up to three in motor vehicle collisions for this weekend, one in a boat, and there's been another drowning. So we're up to five people so far this weekend. This is not a good way to start it out.
No, the year started out pretty good. I recall things were down in those areas, but obviously things have changed.
Well, actually, the year did start out good, and then it went south on there, too, because by comparison, to date so far, just in motor vehicle collisions, the OPP have investigated 233, and last year's benchmark at this time was 195. That's a lot of dead people, 233.
No kidding, man. Any words of advice?
Well, you know, in your car, it's always the same thing. You've got to avoid drinking and driving. You got to wear your seatbelt. Pay attention to what you're doing. And in the boat, like always, you know, how many times you got to say, put on a PFD?
Oh,
And it's that simple.
You know, it is that simple. It's like putting on your seatbelt. I'm sure that there are still folks listening to this signal this morning that maybe go out without a seatbelt on, but I think that number is down into the single-digit percentiles. But when it comes to doing the same thing in a boat, which is putting on a PFD, I will bet you that I dare say the vast majority still don't.
Well, and I'm hoping that people get the message. You know, sometime for all the years you've had the benefit of, or you haven't had the benefit, I've had the benefit of being able to preach on this show one long weekend. Let's say that there's nobody.
Oh.
The number is zero.
Wouldn't that be great, man?
Yeah, I'd probably be deluded, but, you know, let's hope for that sometime.
Well, we still have, there's still a chance.
Weekend comes up frequently in Ontario. That's a good thing about living here. And I don't want your prediction about warm weather in the mid-November to come true.
Oh, I do. Never mind. I know you don't, but I do.
I don't care about the rest of it, just not mid-November.
All right, my friend.
Okay.
Have a great weekend, long weekend, that is. Brad Schlurf, Staff Sergeant with the OPP. Thanks, Brad.
See you later.
All right, moving along. More journal after this. Don't you dare go away.
From the streets of Toronto to the backwoods of Bancroft, here's your Moose Country Minute with Mark Bonikoski.
Let's face some realities here. Men love taking a leak off their back deck, whether it's the deck at the cottage or the deck at the hunt camp. It's what men do. In fact, if they could do it in the big city without being charged with being a flasher, there'd be a lot of happy men, but not so happy wives. Women in general either do not appreciate their man peeing off the deck, or they're jealous. That's my opinion, and the opinion of most men who have back decks. Up in my neck of the woods, I have heard of tradesmen who build docks and decks who will take their tape measure and measure the height of the man in the house from his shoes to his belt before nailing down the center rail of the deck. Why? To prevent splashback, of course. They want to make sure that when the man of the house gets rid of the beer he has consumed, he doesn't have a 2x4 blocking his stream. This is brilliant and something to keep in mind if you're planning to build a deck. Now, every man who cherishes his man freedom will have a favorite spot on his deck for taking care of business. Mine is at the far end, beyond any window, and where my wife rarely ventures. And I can find it in the dark. For the Outdoor Journal Radio, I'm Mark Bonikoski, National Editorial Writer, Sun Media.
Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal Radio on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of Bachelor Viola. And thank you, Mark, for bringing mankind, men in general, mankind, I mean men, back another few centuries and dragging our knuckles once again. Oh, God love you. Ricky, you say you found
our crack research team. Yes. We've uncovered some information on the blue moon phenomenon.
Yes.
I want to share with you. Basically, it is a particularly bright moon, but it's quantified by the second full moon of a month.
Oh.
Usually there's only one.
Why didn't I not know this?
Well, Andrew,
why does nobody tell me this stuff? I'm supposed to be
expected to be an expert.
Knowledgeable.
I'm sorry.
Outdoors.
But, yeah, and of course, it's taken on something that happens very rarely, as in once in a blue moon. So
okay.
That's what I got for you. And more,
right.
If you need more on that, our Twitter feed.
No.
Our Twitter feed has got an update on blue moon.
I think you've done enough. I think you and Mark have done enough for me this morning. Thank you very much. And what a great subject, blue moons, because our next guest is somebody that I've had on a program a couple times, and she is once in a blue moon. There you go. Thank you, Ricky, for bringing that up in a timely fashion. It's What's Bugging You for Muskall, this segment of the program, of course, brought to you by folks at Muskall. But we have Karen Maroon on. She's my next guest, and you've all seen her, I'm sure. She's the executive producer and the star and director of What a Catch television program. This TV show first aired on the Outdoor Life Network to audiences all over North America. Catherine's also a certified fly fisher with the Federation of Fly Fishers. By the way, one of only three female, which I still find this statistic hard to believe, but one of only three females certified in Canada. by that organization. She is a former national director of Trout Unlimited and has fished around the world. I have enjoyed her episodes for years. Not that she's that old, mind you. She's an adventurer and searches for the next great fishing story. Now, about 6 years ago, she contacted Lyme disease. In fact, we found out about it here on the program live. I was shocked when she told us about it. Lyme disease, of course, is on the rise in southern Ontario as a result of warmer temperatures, as John Winters just pointed out to us. And, of course, movement of the vector, infected vectors, which include birds, mice, squirrels, and black-legged deer tick. Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
Well, good morning. A warm good morning from Bermuda. I won't be peeing off my deck.
I was going to ask you about that.
Well, and not because I don't have the equipment. It's just that I'm very much a lady in that I do have a problem when I'm out fishing. I'm a little bit shy in that regard. It's always been a bit of a challenge for me.
I guess it must. You know, it's funny. I'm glad you brought that up, but I don't want to, you know, go over this for two. That's got to be one of the biggest problems in that, you know, man and woman kind of relationship as it pertains to fishing and out on the boat. Somebody's got to come up with an answer for this.
It is difficult because you're meeting a guide for the first time.
Yeah.
And, you know, just it is a bit awkward. And somehow a camera always seems to appear as soon as
Of course.
You know, anyway, I think I could write a book about my misadventures with having to go to the washroom in the wilderness.
I would read that book, by the way, so make sure I'm on your list.
All right. Well, I'll get writing it. I'm sure that I have some interviews for the guys up in the Gas Bay.
Oh,
they've
yeah.
They've got cameras in the trees to look for poachers, but I think they see a lot more than poachers.
Now, Catherine, I understand you're coming to us, you said, from Bermuda. Now, are you making that your home these days?
Yeah, we moved here about 5 years ago. You know, one of those situations where you go away on a fishing trip and then never leave. We yep. all want to do that, but yep. That's what happened. It's a beautiful place, and I still edit my show out of Toronto, but this is where we live now.
Now, before we get into the whole Lyme disease thing, tell me about the show. What's this is year what now?
My goodness, you know, I started the show when I was in my early 30s, and I'm now 45.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
well, thanks for sharing that, by the way.
It's been a real journey, and I have fished around the world. I've met some wonderful people, but I've also been bitten by a lot of bugs, and we were never taught growing up to be worried about bugs. In fact, we used to play that game where a mosquito would bite you, and you'd put your finger down, and so when the mosquito was full, it couldn't pull out its stinger.
Yes.
And then it would blow up, you know that?
Yep.
But the world has changed now, and these bugs are nature's dirty needles, and they're making a lot of people sick. And the big problem is there isn't good testing for diagnosis, and a lot of people don't even understand that they're carrying around these malaria-type illnesses or these other things like Lyme, which are very serious, and they do kill people. And there's not enough being done to educate and prevent the illness, and not enough research money going into saving those of us who have a chronic illness at this point.
Now, were you aware at the time that, you know, you were not feeling well, except that you might have been, you know, in contact with one of these ticks and given you the disease, or was there a long period during, you know, people coming up with answers for you that nobody knew?
Well, I'm one of the few people that really realized at the time what had happened. You know, most people get bitten by these poppy-sized nymphs, and they don't realize until much later that they've been, in fact, bitten and infected with these illnesses.
But was there an actual bite? Did you feel the bite? Like, did you
not
know?
Not always.
No.
And so I was in British Columbia, Canada, and I love to fish in British Columbia. So the information I'm getting isn't to discourage people from going to these places. It's just like when we heard about AIDS, you know, we need to know. Prevention, education. So I was teaching women how to fly cast. I was doing a retreat for Casting for Recovery Canada out in BC. I was bitten. I had a great big festering, angry, blistery patch on my thigh. I had a temperature. I had flu-like symptoms, and I went to the hospital because I thought I might be contagious with something because of all my travel. I thought maybe I've brought something back with me, and I'm with these immune-compromised women. I don't want to make them sick. I better go find out what's going on. So they diagnosed me at the local hospital with shingles, which you think of as an old person's illness.
Right.
Now, I knew I didn't have shingles, but I'm not going to argue with a emergency room doctor.
Right.
And they didn't give me any treatment and sent me on my way. And I never recovered. And I slowly became more and more ill to the point of, after 5 years of infection, I was bedridden. I was very much like someone with Alzheimer's. I was having seizures, passing out, vision issues, lots of pain. I could feel my life energy leaving me very slowly. It's a slow progression for a lot of people.
But you must have gone in and consulted with other medical people during this process.
I did, but my blood work came back, and it wasn't anything that anybody would get excited about. And, of course, because the testing isn't good, no one even tested me for Lyme, actually. And it was only on from the research that I did on the internet and from talking to people, and actually my symptoms matched up with things I was reading on the internet, and I requested a test by iGenics, which is a lab in California, and I ordered the test. My doctor in Canada drew the blood, and sure enough, 2 weeks later, they said, you have Babesia, Bartonella, Ehrlichiosis, marine typhus. I had all of these bug-borne illnesses.
Wow.
And they said, you've got these things, but you've had them for a long time, so we're not going to treat you.
And how are you feeling at this point?
I'm really not well, but I've learned to try to be productive every day and to try to bring awareness to these illnesses so that other people don't walk down this road. I'm afraid I've got a chronic illness at this point.
Oh
my God. I do IVs every day. I have a port, and I do IVs, and I take a lot of medicine, and I've got a lot of health issues, but to see me, I look well.
And are all these health issues from this one single bite?
No, I would say, because these are all different illnesses, some of them are malaria-type illnesses. You know, some of them are illnesses from fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes. You know, all those hours sitting by the river, all those hours sleeping in the wilderness on these great adventures to places like Mongolia or Costa Rica or Japan or, you know, wherever it was. I was constantly being bitten by these bugs, and I didn't know that was going to, you know, I worried about the bears and the snakes. I
right.
didn't worry about the small things like the bugs and the bacteria.
Well, Catherine,
but ultimately, that's what's going to get you.
I'll be very honest with you. As you know, I do a similar job and have been for 30 years. And I, you know, talk a good story when it comes to telling folks about prevention when you're in the outdoors. But much like yourself, I mean, that's the last thing I think about is mm-hmm. getting bit by one of these vectors. And fortunately, or maybe not, because I've had a couple of bouts with something throughout my career that now, listening to folks like you, leads me to believe that maybe I, too, had been bitten along the way by something or other that carried something into my system, because I've been sick for, you know, months on end, and nobody really knew why. So I'm just wondering if maybe I didn't fall into the same situation. But I wanted to say, it's funny how we don't think about it. You know, we expose ourselves out there, and I mean expose ourselves to insect bites, and not really give it much thought. You know?
Well, I here's something to think about. Worse than not being able to have a name for whatever it is that's making you feel awful, because mm-hmm. we all want validation to know, okay, well, this is what it is that I have.
Right.
So you may have one of these illnesses, and they do wane, web and flow, and, you know, wane and whatever, ebb and whatever it is. There's
yep.
Lyme in my brain, so, you know, you'll have times of feeling well and times of being unwell, and you'll have arthritis, you'll just have malaise, there's a lot of things. But the bigger issue is, this is a rich man's illness. You cannot get the proper care in Canada. I'm sorry, I don't mean to offend anyone, because there's a lot of good doctors doing a lot of great work in Canada. But with our social system, they have a protocol for what's okay for treating Lyme disease, and that is 4 to 6 weeks of antibiotics, period. And once that's done, you're done. Now, this is the sister to syphilis, so it is a slow-growing bacteria that's a spirochete that gets into every area of your body. It's a full body illness. And 4 to 6 weeks of antibiotics, if you have an endemic illness that you've had for some time, that's not going to cure you, and this thing will build back up again. And unless you can afford to go to the States or go somewhere else for help, you're going to just lose your health and lose your life slowly.
Wow.
And it's miserable. So the testing is a problem in Canada. It's also a problem in the U.S. The Igenix test, in my experience and my research, does the best job for identifying these illnesses. And then you need to scramble to try to find a doctor who is a Lyme literate doctor.
Wow. I've heard that from several folks, actually, that there is there is a lack of education among the medical community about this thing. And sometimes not only is it misdiagnosed, but missed completely. And
yeah, they really don't want overuse of antibiotics. So
right.
They're sacrificing the few for the greater good.
Wow.
But, I mean, chickens get more antibiotics and access to antibiotics than we do. You know,
wow.
And you really do. That we don't have any other treatment right now other than antibiotics for this illness.
Now, you're putting a significant personal commitment, obviously, to awareness of Lyme disease. Can you quickly tell us about that?
Well, I'm very fearful for people. All my good friends are all anglers and outdoor enthusiasts, and we should continue to do those things. But knowing what I know, how could I not be panicked and very worried for my friends? Because it ruins lives. It takes your life. It takes your career. It takes your marriage. It takes every, you know, your house, because you have to pay for all this treatment.
Yeah.
And it really is an epidemic, a pandemic at this point. And so what I'm doing is I've been working on a film to educate people, to show my journey and other people's journeys with these types of illnesses. And I think it'll help to explain in a way that words can't explain just the anguish of this illness, and maybe people will start to understand how serious this is. We really need to pay attention to this.
When,
I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about it in the years to come.
When is it coming out? When is the film coming out?
Well, it was supposed to come out this fall, but my health being what it is, I went to Iceland to film a few weeks ago to finish filming this. I've been building this show over the last 5 years, and I ended up in the hospital again, of course, because any time I try to do anything, I'm still not well enough. And so my heart and my mind are willing, but my body is just not there yet. So I'm hoping to have it out in a few months, but it's hard to,
how can,
to know for sure.
How can folks find out more about it?
Well, I guess they can check out your website and information, because I'm sure that you guys will be supporting
yep.
this effort.
And, absolutely.
You know, Catherine at whatacatch.net or whatacatch.net is the website. And so it will be, you know, letting people know. It's also going to end up on the air once I get a few more shows edited. What a Catch will be back up on the air, likely in the new year.
Well, Catherine, it's an absolute pleasure talking to you. We could go on forever on this, and I'd like to certainly get you back on the program and give us an update on how things are going with the illness as well as the film.
Well, thank you. I mean, we're like-minded people, and it's always great to catch up with you.
Catherine Maroon, thank you, from Bermuda. Catherine, of course, is host of What a Catch, a television program that has been airing in Canada for several years, and obviously somebody that we need to keep an eye on with regards to Lyme disease. More Journal after this. Don't you dare go away. Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal Radio on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, I'm Angelo Vail. Thanks for joining me on this wonderful long weekend. And a special thanks to Catherine, who was just on the line with us, telling us about Lyme disease. Very interesting, fascinating story. And I just wanted to mention to anybody listening out there that may be in a position where they're maybe wondering if they have it. You need to consult your doctor, and you need to make him or her aware of Lyme disease, because believe it or not, as Catherine mentioned, and as we have stated on the program many a time, there is such a lack of information about this amongst the medical community that not only is it misdiagnosed, but in a lot of cases, the medical personnel that you might be consulting doesn't even know about it. So make sure you bring it up to them. Lyme disease, it's out there. Best way to prevent it, or at least take some precautions, wear product that contains DEET when you're out in the field. I know that there are a million different home remedies and aftermarket things and new gadgetries and all kinds of goodies on the market that all tell you they repel bugs. But from a scientific standpoint, the only product that is scientifically proven to do that is DEET. So make sure you cover yourself with stuff that's got DEET. That simple. And Muskol would be a really good choice, by the way. Must be Ladies' Day today on Outdoor Journal, because we go from one lovely lady to somebody that I've often referred to on the program as the Queen of Northern Ontario, the lovely, the talented, my good friend, Carol Caputo.
Good morning. Hey, Ange, how are you today?
Doing great. Yourself?
Not bad. It's a beautiful day in the Sioux, and it's going to be about 25 degrees today. And
where have you been? You haven't been on the show for a year.
I know. You haven't invited me.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, you have to invite me. Oh. If you invite me, I will come.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought, okay. Sorry. You're right. I'm writing this down, by the way. Just so that we know.
Invite Carol Caputo.
Every week, if I could.
That's right. That's right.
Everything going well in God's country?
You know what? Yeah, we're so far, our summer is winding down beautifully. The weather's held up. It's the leaves are starting to change. It's beautiful.
It's that time of year. Carol Caputo, by the way, for those of you who might not know, is the executive director of the Algoma Travel Association. Just happens to be one of the most beautiful corners on the planet. And if you're looking to get out and maybe experience something totally new and exciting for you and your family, a trip to Algoma will absolutely blow you away. You can get more information on that because it happened to be a great hunting and fishing area, as well as just a touristy family area. But if you want more information on the hunting and fishing aspect, you can check them out at www.huntinginontario.com or fishinginontario.com. So there you go. Let me ask you a couple of questions. First of all, the area that I'm talking about is in that Lake Huron Superior, up in the Elliott Lake and Chapleau area, just so that you can point it out on a map. One of the most spectacular pieces of scenery, I think, on the planet, let alone just here in Ontario. The drive from Sault Ste. Marie to Wawa, is that the greatest drive anywhere, Carol?
I would have to say yes. The interesting thing about that drive, when you drive, it's only a 2.5 hour drive, but we always tell people to plan about 8 hours because you actually, about 50% of the drive, you're actually driving directly through Lake Superior Provincial Park.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of lake access. There's beautiful lookouts. There's soft hikes to the Indian pictographs. You can see, you can touch, you can feel Lake Superior. And for anyone that hasn't experienced that great lake, it's awe-inspiring. Like, it looks like an ocean.
Yeah.
It's the expanse of it. Until you come here and you see the expanse, you can't believe it. Like, it's just, it's wonderful.
Yeah, anybody that I've talked to that has made that drive said exactly the same thing, and that it looks like an ocean. When you come around that first curve, you say, oh my God, this is not a lake. But it is spectacular. Absolutely. By the way, my crack research department just pointed out to me that's goldfishinontario.com. Goldfishinontario.com. There you go. I make errors every now and then.
And all these years you've been telling me you were perfect.
I know, but you're not supposed to repeat that on air.
Well, Minnick tells me different.
Yeah, I can fool you too, but the rest of the world knows. Fall color period. I was talking with our producer, John Winters, of course, as you know, the former superintendent of Algonquin Park, who is no stranger to the fall color changes in that part of the world. But we were talking about its time of year and what prompts it. And I found out something new today, Carol.
And what's that?
That it has nothing to do with temperature. I always thought that, you know, it was one of those things where when it gets cool in the evenings in the fall, the leaves change. But that's not the case. Did you know that?
I did.
Oh, you did? Okay.
It's
a lack of moisture and water.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Look at me. I'm embarrassed.
But that's okay.
How are the colors in the beautiful Algoma region?
You know, right now they're just starting to change. We actually are blessed enough to have a cottage on Lake Superior, and we were just out there yesterday, and they are starting. They are certainly not at its peak. Probably another month till they're on till they're at their peak, in and around. You know, if I could pinpoint a date, I'd be a millionaire, I'm sure. But sometime in between, you know, the 1st of October and the 14th of October is generally the very best time for the leaves.
Okay.
And it's like, honestly, it's like the landscape is on fire.
Now, for those folks who have not been blessed with the opportunity to come up to your neck of the woods, I mean, we've already talked about that drive around Superior, but give us some of the other highlights in Algoma, would you?
Well, you know, we've actually got a couple of very distinctive driving tours. There's the Deer Trail touring route, which incorporates the town of Blind River, along Lake Huron, up the 129, which follows along the Mississauga, over to Elliott Lake, and then back down to Highway 17. So it's a really nice weekend tour. There's a couple of events that go on there in the fall with regards to the arts and local culture and that, like different weekend tours. We also have another circle tour called the Grand Algoma Tour, which incorporates Sault Ste. Marie to Wawa and then back down the 129. There again, a ton of events down here. Fall colors are huge for us, so a lot of different weekend things going on. Once again, doing with arts and culture, arts on the dock in St. Joseph's Island. There's all kinds of wonderful things that go on, as well as the drive. And then we're a little lucky here because we happen to have a train.
Oh, yeah.
That darn train that nobody else has but us. And that takes you from Sault Ste. Marie down into a beautiful Algoma country. It's a one-day excursion. You board the train at 8 o'clock. You get to Agawa Canyon at about noon. You have an hour or so in the canyon, and you're back in the Sioux by 6. And if you truly want to enjoy absolute bliss where there's nobody else but the train and nature, it's a wonderful, wonderful one-day train excursion.
You know, I got to tell you something. When I look at Algoma, it's like you, first of all, you're in charge of this most magnificent corner of the world, but putting it more in terms of Canada and Ontario specific, it's like you played a poker game with the rest of the regions in Ontario, and you are just kicking their butts like the World Poker Tour, and Carol Caputo has got the big stack in front of her.
Yep.
With Algoma. I
yep.
mean, everything is there. Everything is in Algoma. The other, I know the other groups that are listening are probably pissed at me for making that comment, but it is so damn true. It is spectacular. And if you've never experienced it, I'm telling you right now, it's got to be in the bucket list. It's called Algoma, and it is a must-see for everybody in this part of the world, for sure. How can folks get more information, Carol?
You know what? They can visit our website at www.algomacountry.com, or they can call us toll-free at 800-263-ALGOMA, and we'll be happy to answer any other questions. We have downloadable maps for all of the driving tours I mentioned. We've also got information there with regards to somebody wants to go for the big ride and do the circle tour of Lake Superior. We've got information on that. We also have motorcycle friendly routes, so just visit algomacountry.com or give us a call. We'd love to hear from you.
And did I mention that it happens to be the best fishing in the world? Did I mention that?
No, but you know what? Yeah, it is.
Without question.
Yeah,
there's a reason why the Fishing Canada show makes Algoma its second home. It is that good. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Ange, and you have an absolutely wonderful long weekend, and it was nice chatting with you today.
The Queen of Ontario Tourism, my good friend Carol Caputo from Algoma. Thanks, Carol. What a wonderful part of the world. If you have not checked it out, go to the website. Rick, they can probably Twitter this stuff, right?
I could probably figure something out for you.
Yeah, we Twitter something with Algoma on it.
You got it.
All right. All right, there'll be no Twittering now. A special part of the program.
Let's go outside. Coleman, the outdoor company.
Brought to you by Coleman, of course, the outdoor company for your next outdoor adventure. Coleman Canada is the place for you. And that also signifies our good, illustrious producer, John Witter's on the line, former superintendent of Algonquin Park. Johnny, you there?
You're building up Algoma, and it's a great spot. But let's not forget about that beautiful spot called Algonquin Park, Angelo.
Well, I didn't want to say anything. That's the one thing they don't have. But I know Carol well enough. If she keeps playing at that poker table, she'll win that one, too. But right now, somebody else is looking to win Algonquin Park, and I need to talk to you about that. And I'm referring to, of course, the Algonquin land claim that's been on the table actually for about 20 years. Most of us are thinking this maybe it's a 4 or 5 year old program, and it's not. It's been there forever. We've had interviews with the Minister of Aboriginal Affairs over at the Minister of Natural Resources. We've talked to MPPs from various municipalities and counties. Bob Potts, the lead negotiator, who I call the chief negotiator, but the lead negotiator for the Algonquins has been a guest of the show. And of course, a number of other people who are directly impacted by the Algonquin land claim. So this week I thought I would take a break from all those official positions and ask somebody who's been living it for the last 14 years, and that's you, Johnny. So just to setting this up before we get into the meat and potatoes, the Algonquin land claim, if you don't know, is entering into a phase that they're calling the AIP, an agreement in principle. Speculation as to whether this AIP has or has not been drafted or portions thereof have already been submitted. There's a ratification process that is about to take place in the month of September. With the Algonquins, there's all kinds of rumor out there that consultation with other user groups has been totally ignored. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on. Now, the AIP will sort of be the foundation for this modern treaty, which, by the way, covers 1/7 of southern Ontario in the Ottawa Valley, including the city of Ottawa. And, of course, as John just mentioned, 85% of Algonquin Park will be covered in this AIP or in this land claim. Very significant. I dare say one of the most significant land claims in the history of Canada. And I know you've got some very interesting views and opinions. First of all, let me just ask you, are you surprised at the current direction of the AIP discussion?
Somewhat, because over this period of time, there's been a committee of external advisors. Now, this group didn't just march on the scene and say, talk to us. This is a government-appointed committee. So the committee has sat with the government on updates on the status of this claim for the better part of 20-some years. And they represent the interests of people from inside and outside the region. So you've got anglers, hunters, outdoors people, environmental advocacy groups, tourism, outfitters, resorts and lodges, and on and on and on. And the purpose, the primary purpose of bringing this committee together was to get free flow of information through them to all their constituents, all the people that they know, and they have many contacts. And the idea was right from the very outset that this committee would be fully consulted in this land claim, and it's in correspondence, it's in the framework agreement, and so on. Now, the question is, how does that happen if the lead negotiator for the Algonquins is talking to the Algonquins in September, and the minister is quoted in the Toronto Star saying that it's likely that they will have a approval of a draft agreement in principle in early in the new year? Because I can tell you right now that these folks have been consulted perhaps in 3 meetings on fishing and hunting, and not at all on provincial parks or Algonquin Park.
But yet we've had ministers on this very program telling us that that was not the case. In fact, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of them said that there has been ongoing negotiations and discussions with them. So I'm very confused, John.
The Minister of Aboriginal Affairs, Kathleen Wynne, was given a really bad piece of information from someone.
Ah.
Okay, and yes, there have been many meetings with the Committee of External Advisors, in the dozens, but not about consultation. These have been update meetings. This is the status of the current discussions with the Algonquins. They were never asked for any opinions, nor were any proposals shared with them in that form, to my knowledge.
In other words, free lunches. Sit tight, will you, Johnny? I want to finish with this on the other side. We're going to take a quick break. More journal after this. Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal Radio on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Angela Boyle. Thanks for joining me on this wonderful last of the summer-long weekends. For those of you out and about, maybe at the X, among other things, just a great weekend to get it outside. Take it to the streets. Get out of the house. Will be worth your while for sure. On the line with me, our producer, John Witters, former superintendent of Algonquin Park. And we're talking about the Algonquin land claim that will affect anglers and hunters and campers and tourists and businesses in this big sector of land, which will represent 1/7 of southern Ontario. Millions of dollars in people's lives are at stake here. And if we sound like we're, you know, a broken record talking to you about it each and every week on the program, well, that's tough. I'm not going to let go of this thing until we have a solution, because once it's gone, it's gone. It's gone forever, and I take it very serious when it comes to Algonquin Park. And I don't want to, you know, downplay the other areas within this sector of land, but Algonquin Park, my God, how can it even be up for grabs is beyond me. And, of course, John worked there for 14 years. He ran it, and he saw a lot of things that you and I have not been exposed to. And I wanted to talk to him about some of these things. I'm not going to put you on the hot seat today, John, but I think it's important that we bring to light some of the current undertakings by some of the, and once again, some of the folks within the group called the Algonquins in terms of their conservation practices within the park. I know that there's illegal hunting taking place. You and I have discussed off the air numerous times about the illegal fishing that will probably start taking place in a couple of months, has been for years, on the sacred little lakes that sustain brook trout populations in the park. Can we talk about these things?
Yeah.
Can you tell us about some of this stuff?
The first thing is I should set this up by saying that if you had an Algonquin on program right now, they'd say the fishing isn't illegal, even if it's out of season, even if we don't have a license, even if we take more fish than what the regulations say. And this goes back to the fact that court decisions have confirmed Aboriginal rights under the Canadian Constitution, which means that, without getting into the complexity, believe me, it's complex, but to cut to the chase, what basically they would say is that if I am not infringing on that area called conservation or safety, if I'm outside of that, then I'm in a safe place and I can fish when I want, where I want.
John, that's like saying that it's legal, and please do not take this the wrong way for you listening out there. That's like saying it's illegal because of their upbringing that Italians can do extortions. I don't know. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, and I know a lot of people would probably side with that, but you need to read Section 35 of the Constitution. The horse is bolted. That section does uphold Aboriginal and treaty rights.
But can we fix this stuff, John?
Well, some of it is entirely fixable. And here's how I think it needs to be thought through. So the first part of this is there isn't unlimited fish game in eastern Ontario, inside or outside of Algonquin Park. And it only seems reasonable, and when I look at the cues that come from the courts, it only seems reasonable that you have to have some kind of an allocation system. And you allocate within this broader thinking of conservation. So you don't allocate more than what is sustainable. And you allocate on the basis of what's fair for the First Nation and what's fair for all of the rest of us. And then you set up a regulatory regime so that we all abide by that. And if you don't have a regulatory regime, what we found is that people act out and they do their own thing. And I saw that lots in Algonquin Park. So you might have their leadership saying, the responsible thing is to do A, B, and C, and some of their members would say, well, that's not what I'm going to do because I have Aboriginal rights. I'm just going to do what I want to do.
I know, and that's the part that irks me about this, okay? This is, when it comes to fish and wildlife, none of this should apply. How did we ever get into this mess?
Well,
where did this start? How can we get out of it? I want to change things. I want to change things for the better.
Well, here's what I would say, is Canada and Ontario are going to provide to the Algonquins, as part of the settlement, land and money.
Okay.
And in this arrangement, they should be saying to the Algonquins, you're going to be provided with land and money. And we're doing this because, in part, we've infringed on your past and current rights. And what we want to do is we want to bring closure to this and certainty to this. And we want to provide you with a very dignified and reasonable offer. But there are some things we must have in return. And here are the things we must have. We have to have conservation is first. We have to have an allocation model because there isn't enough to go around if everybody takes as much as they want.
Well, not everybody. Let's get that straight now.
Right. Some take more than what they should.
Right.
And at the end of the day, those who won't comply will be sanctioned, and the sanction will be regulation and law.
There, see?
What? Now, it can be done, but that has to be part of your negotiating strategy. And if the idea is, well, it's hands-off, we aren't going to do anything with that, then here's my question. What are you getting for your money? What are you getting for this other part of the settlement?
Nothing. Heartaches. Now, Minister Gravel, Natural Resources Minister Gravel, who was on the program a few weeks ago, and I believe... I don't want to, last time I misquoted, but I believe both ministers said this, that Algonquin Park was off the table. It is not part of this deal.
Well, the land isn't, as in I'll turn you over the title, so it used to be a provincial park, so here's the title to the land, and it's now yours. They have taken that off the table. So let me tell you what's on the table in Algonquin Park.
Okay.
Here are some of the things that have occurred, so I'm not making this up. They have occurred, and they can continue to occur. There's a moose hunt on the east side of the park in 14 townships. Is that moose hunt going to be expanded so that the Algonquins could hunt in all 38 townships?
No.
There has been winter fishing in these brook trout lakes and lake trout lakes in the interior of Algonquin Park. Is that going to continue or is that going to be regulated?
But, John...
Because it will decimate those lakes.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Right.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. We do have systems in place to protect us against that type of poaching, do we not?
We have a regulatory system that's been in place for 30 to 50 years at least, and we tweak it every time we don't get it right. So we make an adjustment to it. So the season may be shortened, or the number of fish you can take may be reduced. In some cases, what will happen is, due to unforeseen events, we have a collapse of a fishery. We close fisheries. We do all of those things, and that... In fact, because of the ecological significance of Algonquin Park and that fishery, that should be something that would be contemplated in all of this.
But
it
we don't
can't
do
hands off.
We don't do it right. Lake Nipissing, case in point, as you know, the walleye populations in Lake Nipissing have been suffering for a number of years, and finally, movement happened in that area where the limits were drastically reduced and eliminated, and all kinds of changes to the taking of walleye out of Nipissing to try and, you know, curb the slide of the population. And by the way, job well done by M&R in terms of establishing the new rules and regs. But I was astonished, disgusted to find out that it did not affect the native community on Lake Nipissing. It was business as usual. In fact, not only was it business as usual, but they went on to take more of the normal quotas that they were taken in previous years. So what happened was that the walleye started declining even worse while we were taking less. How do you do that?
The thing that has to happen is there has to be a regulatory regime for all of us. Once you've allocated the resource, then we're all accountable under the same rule. Now, I want to give you an example of how this could work. There's a tribe, there's a First Nation on the west coast of Vancouver Island, and it's called the Malnulf. And it's an amalgam of several tribes, about 2,000 of them. And they have a treaty that's before the federal government for signing. I believe everybody else has approved it. It has an allocation model, Angelo. It sets out for them how many fish they can take.
Yeah, and isn't that wonderful?
Well, I think it's far-sighted. I think that probably the First Nation out there comes to the realization that it's in their best interest to have this regulated too. Because if we're all going to be in this together as neighbors and friends, then you can't have the individual as a driver in how we will perform.
So
because you've got the honorable people that are out there doing all the right things.
I got to move along, but I got to ask you one final question. So as the chief, the CEO, commanding officer of Algonquin Park for all those years, why didn't you just start busting people for breaking the law with it? Why didn't you just say the hell with what Queen's Park tells me to do? I know what's right and I know what's wrong and I'm going to do the right thing.
Okay, so the Ontario government has an interim enforcement policy. The interim enforcement policy says that if you find a First Nations person committing an offense, under the terms of a provincial regulation, what you do is you prepare what's called an Aboriginal Person Violation Report, contact the chief, and then this report is filed with the Government of Ontario through the Ministry of Natural Resources, its lawyers, etc. They will instruct the district manager, park superintendent, or conservation officer on whether charges will or will not be laid.
This is ridiculous.
They are not going to pursue a case which they believe they cannot win. They're not going to pursue one which they think would be contrary to law, the Constitution. And in many cases, we would submit these violation reports, and we would be told, no, we're not proceeding with that. And we were also told this would be cleaned up. It would be a part of what they referred to as the main table being the Algonquin negotiating table. It will be cleaned up at that level. What we will do is resolve this through the treaty negotiations.
I would like to submit to everybody listening that this is the problem that we have in this part of the world right now, what John has just said. We have laws, we have lawmakers, they make laws, but those laws are loosey-goosey. They don't apply to everybody. That's the problem we're having right now with the gangbangers downtown fall into this category. You know, our laws are pretty cut and dry for law-abiding citizens, but they don't seem to be cut and dry for people who want to break them. Does that make sense? Like, how absurd is what you just told me is ridiculous.
So, Angelo, you know, the way that you could possibly break the impasse on this, and this has been discussed, and in my mind it should happen sooner than later. Let's get the Algonquin leadership in the same room with the Committee of External Advisors, and let's have a mediated discussion where we all talk about what are our interests and what are our concerns. They're going to tell you we're concerned about conservation. We're concerned about the fishery. They're looking seven generations out. They want to have a vibrant, healthy fishery then, too. Then the question is, well, if we're all going to be in this together, whether it's talking about moose or deer or lake trout or brook trout, how do we deal with this? What do we do with this? What do we do with bad apples? And I think that it's possible to sort that out.
I know exactly what I do with bad apples. It's very simple. Why are we pussyfooting around this issue? There's a very simple thing you do with bad apples. You get rid of them so that they don't infect that bushel of good apples. My mom taught me that when I was a little kid.
You might, in fact, get the endorsement from the Algonquins, because in small communities, everybody knows it's very difficult for leaders within the small community to take that on, but it is not that difficult if you determine your enforcement approach.
Oh, you're killing me, buddy. But I know it's the way of the nation, the way of the land, and we will stay on top of this thing and try and at least keep folks aware of the process. And I know you've got your teeth into it like a rabid dog, which is great news for all of us, by the way. Keep up.
Well, the last thing I want to say on this is if there's anyone there representing the Minister of Natural Resources or the Minister of Aboriginal Affairs, come and meet with the Committee of External Advisors. Come and talk to them. Real good group of very intelligent people.
And if you'd like a connection, if you'd like a connection with that group and you can't find them, just call Outdoor Journal Radio.
We'll broker that, and yeah. I would say the same thing to all of those Algonquin listeners out there and to Mr. Potts. Come and meet with us. Come and meet with the CEA. Great group of people, and we'll all be better for it.
All right, my friend, thank you very much. Appreciate it as per usual.
Well, I'm down here in Niagara.
Yes.
I'm in the area of Niagara on the lake, and I'm just about to take my beautiful wife out for breakfast.
And so you should.
Yeah.
Thank you, my friend.
Hey, have a great weekend.
John Winters, producer of Outdoor Journal Radio and former superintendent of the world's most wonderful park, Algonquin Park, and came clean, which is very nice. I appreciate that. More journal after this. Don't you dare go away. Welcome back to the program, and that music means we're going to a place where everything makes sense. Everything is right. Everything is as it should be. We're going to Thornbury, Ontario. Our good friends from Black Angus Fine Meats and Game, Sean Kelly on the line. Hey, buddy.
And hopefully a few dollars as well.
Well, there's always the possibility of that, but who needs dollars up there?
Well, it's better than cents.
Well, I suppose, but you don't need money. What are you going to do with money?
Apparently you're right, because I don't have any.
Sean Kelly on the line with us, of course, proprietor of Black Angus Fine Meats and Game, locations in Rivas Road in Mississauga, the centerpiece in the southern Ontario area, just north of Lakeshore, and, of course, the Palacios Estates, the headquarters, the plant, as they call it, on Highway 26 in Thornbury, just west of Collingwood. And if you're looking for anything in terms of fine, and I want to emphasize the word fine, high-quality meats, this is where you need to be, plain and simple. Now, I have done that, by the way. I'm just setting you up. I have done that. I've made a decision for this weekend's Viola Long Final Hurrah Weekend barbecue, backyard barbecue on my new deck that I've been building, by the way, all summer, in case anybody's interested. Almost complete. Might be complete by later today. I have decided I am going to tame it up a little bit, tame it down, if you will. I usually would do wild game on the Barbie, but I'm just going to do a good old dry-aged strip loin for a change. What do you think of that decision?
I think that's wonderful, and I was just thinking that on the deck you'll have it done just in time to shovel it.
Pretty much. You've been talking to my wife.
And when you go down to Mississauga today to pick up your beautiful dry strip loin, which Mark will actually cut himself for you, 60 beautiful days on the rail, you will be able to enjoy a barbecue that Mark's putting on today. Sort of a one-year anniversary barbecue that in the Mississauga location, pulled pork, brisket. It's going to be a wonderful day. Wonderful day for both our customers and for Mark's ego.
So what? Well, he doesn't need any help there. What a wonderful way to end the summer. Go down to 360 Rivas Road in Mississauga and have yourself a great. I know I've sampled these goods before that Mark makes. Pulled pork. My God. Wild boar pulled pork, I trust.
Yes, correct.
Absolutely.
Correct.
And have some samples while you're there. Don't eat lunch. Go down and have lunch down there. And then while you're there, walk through the store and check it out. I defy anybody to walk into that store. I defy you to walk into that store and not want to bring stuff home. It's impossible.
Well, I hope so. That's why they come. I mean, and speaking of your dry-aged strip loin, and we're not pulling any legs here in the sense that we say that we age this meat in the air in our coolers for 2 months. So the meat that you buy today, the dry-aged strip loin that you buy today on September the 1st, would have gone into our coolers on July the 1st.
And what's the reason for that, Sean?
Well, again, it's going back to the way that we used to do meat years and years ago. I mean, we didn't grade meat. We would bring them in and we would age them in order to tenderize them because we didn't have the science behind it. So all we're doing is going back to the way it used to be. And it's a fantastic way of bringing extra flavor into the meat because you're adding value to it in the sense of just like cheese or wine or anything else.
Or meat.
Or meat. Like,
no.
You always
me.
Or you, yeah. Yeah,
me,
well,
me.
That's a.
Age me.
Yeah, well, my wife runs a nursing home, so I know what you're talking about.
Oh.
But anyways. But it just adds flavor and value to that meat to make it a distinct product that you're not going to find anywhere else unless they're doing it the same way.
All right, so I got this beautiful cut of meat. I've got this wonderfully built deck with a big barbecue on it, and I'm ready to go. Somebody has, and I don't know whether it was you or maybe the neighbor, I don't know, he's always looking over the fence, just like Mr. Wilson. He said something about making sure to take the steaks out of the fridge at least a half hour before it goes on the barbecue. Any truth to that rumor?
That's a good idea. It basically lets the meat relax a bit, so you're not going from that very cold 35-degree temperature up to 400 in that quick of a time. It doesn't shock the meat. You get a nicer finish to it. I mean, it's not going to make a big difference, but it's going to make a little bit of a difference. And also, if you're going to put any type of spice on there, salt and pepper, if it's sitting there at room temperature, it will accept that spicing a lot better than it would be at a colder temperature.
Well, you know what I started doing, and what a great lead-in into the next segment, I started using my food saver to do that. And so what I do now, because I'll be honest with you, it would be great to think that I'm intelligent enough to consistently remember to take the meat out of the fridge, salt and pepper, put my spices on, let it sit and let it absorb, but I ain't that bright. Plain and simple. So what I do now, I don't even tax my brain on trying to remember that stuff. I throw it in the marinating element of the food saver. I put in all my spices, my little, you know, whatever I want to do, marinate. And within 8 minutes, it's ready to go. It's good to put on the barbecue.
And that's a great point because it's common sense. Because if you look, if you try and marinate in just a regular plastic bag, you'll see that most of the marinate will end up in the bottom of the bag
exactly.
Or off to the side. So you do the food saver method of doing it, you'll notice that the marinade has no place else to go but into that solid piece that's into the middle. I mean, we do it all the time. It's just a fantastic thing. So you don't have to plan your dinner for tomorrow in the
no.
sense of trying to get that together. You can do it. Go to the store today after you're done. Go buy your meat. Go back. Go home. And then, like I said, an hour before you're ready to have your guests sit down, I mean, everything's ready to go in your fridge or on your counter.
8 minutes I can marinate a piece of meat total. So it has changed my life. Something else I do with the system, by the way, and it's going to be unveiled in the next few weeks on the Fishing Canada show. And you're saying, Fishing Canada show, what's that got to do with marinating? Well, let me tell you what Peter and I have started doing. We actually started a couple of years ago experimenting. And it is an incredible new fishing device. We use the food saver to actually marinate our baits. No, don't laugh at me. This is not a laughing matter.
No, I want to hear the story. Come on.
Okay, so here's what's going on. You know how you talk about buying local and, you know, making sure your food is from within a certain distance and how wonderful it is to go back in time and do it the way our forefathers did and all that stuff. And by the way, I agree with you 100% on that. Okay, so we have the same concept in fishing now. Let me give you a case in point. So I go to Lake Nipissing, for example, and I want to fish for walleye. And what's the first thing that you do is you end up, you know, getting out your scented baits, your plastic curly tails or minnow bodies, et cetera, that are scented from Tennessee or Louisiana or Tokyo or Honduras or wherever all these baits come from. Somebody there put some scent in them and put on the bag scented baits. And we, like the sheep that we are, look at the bag and say, ah, yes, very good. Scented baits. I will take to Lake Nipissing. And we throw this scented bait in Lake Nipissing and expect the walleye in Lake Nipissing to have read the same book we read. And that is that any scent on any bait will fool them into believing it's their food. Well, I don't buy that anymore. What I do is use essence or scent from that local area. And in this particular case, Lake Nipissing, we purchase local bait, whether it's minnow, whatever the fish are happening to forage on that particular period, depending on the season. But let's just, for example, talk about minnows. So we get our minnows locally. We, in this part, kids, you might want to sort of cover your ears on this one. We puree the local scent into a nice pasty consistency, and then we put it in our marinator with our plastic baits, and 8 minutes later, every plastic bait I've got is oozing with the local flavor. And we throw them in, and you know what? Those darn walleye think they're eating the real deal.
You know something? You made a couple of, maybe three or four great points there, one being obviously the tip that you just given everybody in order to be more successful in their pastime. But also, it goes to almost to retailing, too, in that you are better to buy or source your products from
local
people that love to do what they do.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if it's the meat business or the fishing business. There's no point in buying a fishing tackle off of a tailor.
Absolutely.
So you've just given a great example. You, the end user, at a high-end end user, an expert in the field, Hall of Fame, all that kind of stuff. Where's that smoke when you're looking for it?
Thank you. Right here in the booth.
Yeah, exactly. And you're giving these tips, but also you're saying you're giving an idea for success on the end. So if anybody tries to talk to you, just like you said, if you go into a store and somebody tries to talk to you into another method of doing something that suits only what they're trying to sell, this is a fantastic idea as far as taking a product and being able to apply it. Buy off of people who love what they're doing.
Well, you're going to see a lot of it coming up, like I said, on the Fishing Canada show starting mid-September with the new series. And we're going to show you how this exciting new approach to fishing will alter the way you think of things. And it dumbs it down. Certainly it did for me. It just makes things a lot clearer and more simple to use, use local. If you're going to that lake, get the food that the fish are eating in that lake.
I think it's a great thing, and I've said this to before. As a young father, I wish I had been more educated on the outdoors and how to teach my kids that we love to fish. I was just terrible at it. If I learned more stuff to take them out to be successful, then we'd have more of a following just inside of our family alone. And I think that goes to true with a lot of young families now. We'll start getting to know how to, whether it's to fish or even to cook, it just makes life more enjoyable when you're actually doing the process.
Very well put, my friend.
Can I say two things to you, please?
Please.
I was and more smoke blowing your way. Fantastic show today. Some of the very moving guests in respect to the lady from down south there in Bermuda. Very moving. John's been very informed. Information as usual. Mm-hmm. I see that the Toronto Sun had a article on the invasion of the frankenfish this week.
Yes.
They're about 2 years behind you.
Thank you, my friend.
So it just shows you, if you want to be first, listen to this show.
And you know what? Maybe in the weeks, months, maybe years to come, somebody will actually write a story about the Algonquin land claim that's going on. Could you imagine? Wouldn't that be a breakthrough?
Touche.
Thank you, my friend.
Take care.
For more information, Black Angus Fine Meats, check them out, www.blackangusmeat.com. Food Saver products that we talked about are available at Canadian Tire, a sale, and other leading hardware stores in Ontario, or check them out at www.foodsaver.com. Keep it fresh. If you're going to use it, you might as well use it properly and seal it. Keep it vacuum sealed, and you can also marinate wild game. Ah, imagine that. Wild game music. That's because we're listening to the theme song from Canada in the Rough, Canada's premier and most watched hunting program, if not the world's most watched hunting program. Our good friend Keith Beasley, one of the Beasley boys that puts the show on. Good morning, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, Ange. How are you doing?
I'm doing just wonderful, thank you. Sorry to keep you waiting this morning.
Hey, I sit and just salivate listening to him talk about meat, and then you get into puree, so I didn't get as hungry, but then I wanted to go fishing. So it was all good, buddy.
Keith, you got to see this stuff, man. I got to show it to you.
I'm in. See,
it
don't
is
be.
It's incredible. Those plastic baits that you use, doesn't matter what it is, by the way, because it's all porous, right? Well, you put it in this marinade little thing, and you turn it on, and it you can see it sucking in all of the essence of what you put in there.
I love it.
Oh, incredible. And it makes fishing easier. But I understand from last week's conversation with you that bear hunting might not necessarily be all that easy, unless you go, of course, to the huntinginontario.com site for bear locations, your portal to your next hunting adventure.
Yeah, actually, hearing the queen on there, Mrs. Caputo, she's in Bear Central. That is a fantastic bear area. But yeah, bear hunting's not that easy. Those big boys live with their nose to the ground, and if anything goes wrong with scent, they are on you. So we had a week of filming that didn't go as well as we planned, so we'll be back at her in a few weeks. But
I find that very fascinating, because I hear all the time, well, now bear hunting's so easy, that's not fair, and you know, it's I don't do it because it's too easy. And here is probably one of the leading authorities on bear hunting in the world, and he gets skunked. I love it.
Yeah, well, and it's part of the game. And I mean, people, I get emails all the time with the show, you know, telling us it looks so easy, and sometimes I have to email people and say, I'm making 22-hour episodes of the highlights of the season. I don't have time to make it of the lowlights, because you wouldn't sit and watch it all. A lot of hours in a tree that don't nothing happens. So,
oh, that is absolutely incredible. Obviously, location's important, especially
everything. And we were on the Bears, Angelo. I this was heavily scouted, heavily time put in. I put my stands up 2 months ago to minimize. All that happened was we set up our whole set for the camera crew of everybody for north and west winds, which usually get late August. August and early fall, and the winds, it was a different weather pattern. It came in from the south and from the east, and totally wrecked our hunt. Literally, they're just that easy.
And so what'd you do after? How long did you spend on it, by the way?
I spent 4 nights on it. So what I would do was, the first night I didn't know, the wind was moving 2 kilometers an hour. So when you let a piece of milkweed go out of your hand, it would literally drift slowly through the forest. That was enough to wreck the first 6 bears on us that were coming in. And then I changed the game every night after that. I'd try to trick them up. I'd get on the ground on the other side in the wind. But once they'd smelt us once, they'd come in totally. They'd circle the bait every time. So they'd come in. One time I had one 12 yards from me, and he finally got onto me. So,
sorry.
And we're bow hunting, right? So it's not like a rifle where I can just find a vital hole 90 yards through the woods. I need to wait for this bear to give me the perfect ethical shot to make it proper. So
sorry to laugh about this, but I've been on that side of the fence so many times.
And I'll tell everybody that wants to listen to me, that's hunting, and I love it. I love it. We don't harvest something every time. It's part being out there and part of the journey, and we're thrilled to be out there. So don't get me wrong. Don't cry for me. I was having a lot of fun.
But finding the perfect spot obviously is important, especially when it comes to black bears. And we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I understand you have a special guest. His name is Nick Doyle, and he's with Rocks Hunt Camp.
He's the bear king, that boy.
Bear king. So stay tuned. More Journal after this. Don't you dare go away. Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Angelo Viola, thanks for joining me this wonderful long weekend, the last weekend of the year. On the line with me, good friend Keith Beasley from Canada in the Rough, Canada's premier most watched hunting production, maybe in North America, I think. I know they've won several awards in the U.S. as well. And joining Keith and I from Rocks Hunt Camp is Nick Doyle, Bear King, as he's often referred to. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Andrew. How's it going?
Good. You have Keith Beasley on the line as well from Canada in the Rough, no stranger to bears.
Yeah, good morning to you too, Keith. Hey, bud.
So I don't know whether you heard it or not, but Keith was out bear hunting recently and spent 4 days and got busted by the bear. How common is that at Rocks Hunt Camp?
Well, it does happen. The wind has a big factor in bear hunting, that's for sure. Their nose are unbelievable, and if you're not playing to win right, it can definitely happen. You know, you might be playing to win right, and if that wind swirls and that bear's coming in, it's easily to get busted, that's for sure.
Keith, have you been up to Nick's neck of the woods?
Myself, I haven't. I've had a couple buddies hunt with him, and we'll be up in Nick's at the end of the month. But Nick sends me pictures of all the work that he does, and they've taken some tremendous bears this fall and many years in the past.
Now, Nick, tell folks exactly where Rocks Hunt Camp is, would you?
Well, Rocks Hunt Camp, it's located in Horn Paint, Ontario. It's mm-hmm. a drive-to hunting and fishing adventure outfitting camp. It It's located on Highway 631 and Airport Road, 2 kilometers south of Horn Pain.
Okay, so it's not that, it's not like on the other side of the planet or anything like that, and you've got probably some of the best bear hunting on the planet.
Yeah,
a couple of questions.
Bear and moose hunting.
And moose as well. And I understand you have some pretty good fishing in your neck of the woods, too.
Very good, yeah.
Yeah, walleye and pike, I trust?
Walleye, pike, trout, and we got some perch fishing, too.
No way.
Yeah.
Before we get into the bear stuff, I just need to ask, can folks sort of call in last minute to come up to a place like yours, or is this one of those deals where you got to sort of think it out a year ahead of time?
Yeah, well, for the fishing, it's not a problem, but for the hunting, it takes me a year to plan and budget for it.
Wow.
And I want to offer my clients the best hunting around, so I have to, plan ahead of time to ensure the best hunting possible.
Now, you're in the midst of your, obviously, fall hunting season. Bear is open right now?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And you've got hunters there as we speak?
They're rolling in on Monday.
What are we expecting from this year's hunt?
Well, so far this year, I'm halfway through my season, and I'm running on 100% success rate.
Wow.
And we've taken three of them, three Pope and Youngs over 400 pounds, and I'm looking to hit 100% this season after this week's hunt.
And Keith, is that normal?
That's tremendous. I mean, yeah. It's normal for a guy like this, and we've hunted with lots of bear outfitters. This guy puts a ton of time and energy in, but those are tremendous. Those Pope and Young bears he's talking about, that's the world record scoring system for archery taken bears, so that's a tremendous achievement.
And how big would one of these, what would a big bear be?
Are they 400 pound-ish?
Yeah, 400 plus.
Holy mackerel.
And these are big animals, Ange. Like these look like those new little mini cars they got out.
Holy. And you're going to be there at the end of the month, Keith?
Yeah, I'm heading up with Nick hopefully last week of September.
Well,
I'll be ready for you.
And Nick, keep in mind he's had a pretty bad bear season so far. So hopefully he's going to be in good hands with you.
Oh yeah, I got him set up on a big bear. I just hope everything works out there.
For more information on bear hunting in general in Ontario or Nick's place, you can go to www.huntinginontario.ca. That's the portal to your next hunting adventure. Or you can go directly to www.rockshuntcamp.com and check out Rock's Hunt Camp. And check out Keith Beasley at Canada in the Rough. Guys, thank you very much.
Cheers, Ed.
Take care. I have to admit, it's something I have personally never done, but I would find it fascinating. I've certainly encountered bears in the woods myself, but I've never gone and sat there and did the whole hunt thing. I think it would be fascinating. And the good news is that, obviously, for any last-minute shoppers, if you will, there's probably still places that you can go if you want to do it this year. And once again, it's www.huntinginontario.com. .ca. But before you go there, you need to have the goods. You need to have the equipment. You need to have all that stuff that take with you on these hunts. And what better place to start than Sail Outdoors? And our good friend Aaron Newnham on the line. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Good morning, Angelo, to you too.
Do you hunt, by the way? I have to ask you that.
No, I'm not a hunter. I was several years ago. I used to be a small game hunter, mainly for partridge.
Yep.
But I stopped that. I guess as I got older and had children and I had no time.
You have to compromise, right? You have to make decisions. What's at the top of the list and what sort of gets pushed down? And for me, hunting was one of those things. Once again, as you just said, when I was younger, I loved hunting for, you know, fowl and that kind of stuff. But haven't done it in years. You know, I might have to take it back up again.
I think I also would take it back up. Yeah. I think for myself personally, living in an urban setting, is the access. I mean, I'd have to drive pretty far just to have access. Unlike fishing, which is relatively close to urban settings, hunting, it's a commitment, a little bit larger commitment, and the people who do it are very passionate about it.
Yep.
But if you're living in an urban setting, it's not as accessible as, say, fishing, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, isn't it? Back to school, not to get off topic, but, you know, we think of Sail as the outdoor superstore and a place where you get all your fishing, camping, hunting, and outdoor recreational activity supplies, but it's a great back-to-school place, is it not?
Oh, it's an excellent back-to-school place, especially for backpacks and footwear and clothing. Well, I wouldn't say for the younger kids, but more of the adolescents and, they say, university-type students going back to school. It's an excellent place to go back to school.
It's funny you mentioned backpacks. I was into the Oshawa store the other day getting a multi-tool, and I happened to glance around, and I looked at the backpack wall. Has there ever been a larger collection of backpacks assembled in any retail operation in this country?
No, and actually, I would say almost North America in terms of backpacks. I had a major supplier come up from San Francisco last year, and they were at our head office in Laval, and they basically said exactly what you said. They said, I've been all over North America, and I've never seen a selection of backpacks like this anywhere.
It is unbelievable.
It's really good. I mean, we have people there and product for everybody. And whether you're a day hiker, a serious hiker, or a man or a woman, there's a backpack there for you and your needs. And just, I'd say, drop by any of our sale locations and talk to one of our sales staff and get fitted properly.
And by the way, aside from backpacks, they also happen to have 500,000 other items in every one of the stores across the nation called Sale. If it has anything to do with the outdoors, you will find it there. Truly Canada's outdoor superstore. Visit one in your area. Locations in Oshawa, Vaughan, Burlington, soon Etobicoke, Ottawa, throughout Quebec, and growing by the day. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Aaron Noonan from Sail Outdoors. More information is available at www.sail.ca. We're going camping with Brad Kampkin. He's been on the program a couple of times, certainly in the past years. He owns a company called Kampkin's RV, of all things, just up the road from us. Good morning, Brad. How are you?
Angelo, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing great. I feel like I'm a sprinter, though, today. I'm running down the home stretch, heading to the finish line. I can see it in front of me, my friend.
You know what always amazes me is they call them holiday weekends, and we seem to work harder on the weekend than we're supposed to.
You too, huh? Hey, Brad, I just quickly wanted to bring you in because, you know, most people associate campers and that kind of thing with an early season purchase. But I'm talking to folks who are looking at RVs now as a fall thing. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If you go back a number of years ago, it really was very seasonal and it was a fair weather activity. But nowadays, we have a combination of a lot of our customers who really start their camping season at Labor Day or after Labor Day. And that would be our retired customers. A lot of them are retired, and they're just getting going. They're getting ready for fall camping in Ontario. I know the provincial parks, in talking to John, who he was involved with the provincial parks for years, yep. He says the number of people that go camping in the fall is a huge number.
It's phenomenal.
And the trailers, I mean, in the old days, they were fairly basic and simple. And, you know, we call them recreational vehicles or RVs. But, Angelo, these campers, that anything from a little pop-up camper that you can tow behind a minivan to, you know, your full-size trailers and fifth wheels and motorhomes, you know, they're comfortable, very comfortable. Oh, you're warm and you're dry.
I think you're being very modest when you say they're comfortable. They're darn right luxurious, and they have all the amenities that you have at home, for God's sakes. No wonder more and more people are gravitating to them. But you made a good point, you know, that the RV sales, is certainly in Ontario, if not worldwide, is geared more towards the retired age group or getting close to that point. What do you think the reason for that is?
Well, it's interesting. It's the word demographic comes to mind. We were told this a number of years ago. The baby boomers, yeah. Which I include myself in that demographic, but the baby boomers are the retirement age people now, and they're a large bubble of the population that for many years took their families camping, and now it's their turn to go maybe on their own with the kids all out of the house, the empty nesters. Also, Angelo, very interesting, there's what they call an echo boom, and that would be the children of the baby boomers, and they're all right. in their 30s or early 30s or late 20s now, and they've got their own young families. So we got a really nice summer camper who, you know, these are all the folks that are taking their kids camping during the summer. But mom and dad and the grandparents, they're getting ready to go this fall, and we see it at the sales lot, folks coming through who are, have had all the big RVs, they've had all the big campers, and now they're coming to us, and they want to take a nice trailer that's maybe 16 to 20 feet long and just do some touring in the fall, you know?
What a great way to introduce, I think, a young family to the outdoors, you know, that maybe is not ready to take that real challenge of backpacking or tenting. What a great way to sort of get everybody going in the outdoors than the trailer. Listen, I'd love to talk to you forever, and I'm going to get you back on the program. We are running a little bit late today. Suffice to say that if folks want more information on this wonderful thing called RVing, go to www.campkins.com, or better yet, visit Brad in his Whippy store. Brad Campkins on the line. Thank you, Brad.
You're welcome, and I appreciate you taking the time. Thanks.
No problem. Brad Campkins from Campkins RVs in Whitby. Check it out. Once again, www.campkins.com. Great way to start your outdoor adventures. But now it's time for me to have a little mental health time.
Dr. Gord's office.
Oh, I'm going to need a doctor. These fish just won't eat. I'm trying everything down there, and they're not biting it. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Please hold. I'll get the doctor.
Holy mackerel. You can't just take off on me like that. You have a responsibility to your patients, my friend.
How are you doing, Ange?
Good. A little fish talk with the doc. Outdoor Canada Magazine's fishing editor, Gord Pizer, on the line, who's been away for a couple of weeks. He left me out there all by myself.
High and dry.
Tell me, did somebody actually pay, did I read this correct? Somebody paid $19,000 for your soul?
You know, they did last fall. The gentleman's name was Dave Addy.
Wow.
From Lloydminster, Saskatchewan. And believe it or not, Dave actually was a co-owner of the Edmonton Oilers, but it was all for a great cause, the Saskatchewan Fish and Wildlife Federation, kind of comparable to the OFAH here in Ontario.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it nice when somebody does that? Isn't it nice when they are so giving?
It really is, Ange.
It just makes me my soul feel good when I hear that.
But you know what the problem was when, and I thought, you've done many of these charity things as well, and I thought, you know, if they get $1,000 or two, it got to 5, and then it got to 10, and then it got to 12 and 15. And, but here's the neat thing, and I actually did a blog. Folks can go on the Outdoor Canada Magazine website, and I wrote a whole blog about this because good things happen to good people.
Yes.
And they came over, he and his buddy, Dave McKenzie. You will not believe this. We got 6 over 10 walleyes.
Oh!
We got a 30, a 31, 2 32s, a 33, and believe it or not, a 35 15-pound walleye.
Oh, my God. Can folks have a peek at these things somewhere?
Yeah, they're on the Outdoor Canada website on the blog.
Oh,
I put a bunch of photos up, and I wrote about the story. But, you know, that's what we titled it, Good Things Happen.
Oh, man, what a great story. I want to talk to you about that at length, as I do about that entire trip. But we're going to have to keep it on hold till next week, my friend.
Sure.
Are you back for a while now? Can I relax a little bit?
I am back for quite a while, I hope.
You're listening to Gord Pizer, the doc, as we call him on Fish Talk. And by the way, you're going to be able to see Fish Talk on the Fishing Canada show starting in a couple of weeks. Gord will be a regular part of that program on Global Television Network each and every week. He will bestow upon you some excellent advice. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks a bunch, Ange.
Gord Pizer, Outdoor Canada Magazine's fishing editor. Wow. Did we blow through this week or what? Ooh, special thanks to Catherine Maroon from What a Catch television program, our Queen of the North, Carol Caputo, Algoma Travel Association, of course, Brad Campkins from Campkins RVs, Nick Doyle from Rocks Hunt Camp, What a great weekend this is going to be for the Violas on that new deck. On behalf of Outdoor Journal Radio producer John Winters, our technical producer Rick Dolishny, engineers Dan Riccio and Mark Bolo, a new man on the board, I'm Angelo Viola saying have a safe and happy long weekend, everybody. We'll catch you next Saturday.